Good afternoon, everyone. You probably thought it was Brett instead of me. When I was in high school, I had an old Model A Ford, and it was a classic car. It was black, as many of the cars of that age were. And it was very easy to service. If something went wrong with the spark, you could lift the hood up, take a crescent wrench, go in and take the spark plugs out. There was plenty of room. You weren't obstructed by a lot of wires and other things. And if it wasn't getting gas, you simply turned the little lever underneath the glass filter that held the fuel filter and took it out and blew through it, because a lot of times sediment would accumulate in the gas tank and be sucked into the filter. And you usually were able to be on your way. Now, I don't mean to oversimplify it, because obviously there were other things that went wrong, but it was very easy to service that car. Fast forward to today, and when the red light on my speedometer or the dash goes on, it goes into the garage, because unless you have a doctorate in electrical engineering from Harvard and a plethora of computers and a battery of diagnostic equipment, there's no way you're going to diagnose what's wrong with it, much less service it. So times have changed. I passed my 3 score 10 last November, and I've seen a lot of changes during that time. But there's one thing I have learned during that time. I've probably learned more than just one thing, but one thing I know for sure. My children and my grandchildren can run circles around me when it comes to cameras, cell phones, computers, iPods, Blackberries, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, when we get something, we need to have them come in and either help us program it or read the instructions so we understand it. Now, I don't know about you, but have you ever tried to get into some of these cartons with the things come in? Just an ordinary pair of flashlight batteries, it takes a, like a flamethrower or a blowtorch to get through that plastic. I thought someday it'd be interesting to go to the emergency ward of a hospital and take a survey of how many people go to the emergency ward with puncture wounds, knife cuts, stab wounds from trying to open some of these packages. But once you get in, you're fine. The instructions come in 6 languages, and that's okay. That's okay as long as you have glasses and a magnifying glass and maybe a little jeweler's eye lens to be able to decipher them. So times have changed. Things have changed. We live in a different age. When I was a freshman in college, I'd started dating a girl from Snohomish who was a sophomore before I went down there. And when I came home for winter break, her parents invited me to her grandmother's for dinner. Now, her grandmother was a witty Irish lady, very, very sharp, sharp as a tack. She probably was in her late 70s, maybe early 80s. And after dinner, she got me aside and began to interrogate me, and I'm sure it was to see what my intentions were toward her granddaughter. The fact that we broke up 2 or 3 weeks later, I'm sure, was in no small part due to that conversation. But our relationship was pretty much doomed to begin with, because I was down in the Bay Area and she was in Snohomish, and long distance relationships are tenuous at best. But anyway, one thing she told me that I have never ever forgotten, and that was this. She said, "You can't put a young head, or I should say an old head, on young shoulders. You can't put an old head on young shoulders." And even though I was a smart aleck freshman at that time, I could see the veracity and the truth of that statement. In other words, you can't take the accumulated wisdom from someone who is old and just dump it into an 18-year-old and expect them to absorb and understand and utilize it all. Life is not like that. I once talked to a parent who said, he had a 13-year-old daughter, he said, "I wish I could put my daughter in the end of a big pipe and pull her out at age 21 and escape all of the tumultuous teenage years where she's finding her newfound freedoms and making decisions and making choices." And I said, "Well, why would you want to do that? You want to walk along with her to help her, to be able to give her advice." And let's face it, you know, where do we get our white and gray hair later on in life except from some of the hormonal things that happened and the stress that you spent waiting up, you know, for your children to come home during that time? Life is like that. You learn from experience. Common sense and wisdom come from experience. Spiritually speaking, it's the same way. Now, it would be really nice if Mr. Luker would drive in here every Sabbath, take his bucket of common sense and wisdom, we'd all stand at attention, tilt our heads to one side, he'd take a funnel, pour in our quota for the week, pat us on our back, and we'd be on our way. But that's not the way it works. Now, in a sense, you're trying to get wisdom and common sense, hopefully from up here. But sometimes, depending upon what's happened in your life, sometimes depending upon your mood, maybe it goes right over your head, or maybe it hits you obliquely and skids off into the stratosphere, or goes in one ear, rattles around for a while, and exits. But every once in a while, some little nugget of truth will be absorbed, will stay there. You'll pick up on it, and it makes sense, and you make a dramatic change in your life, and that's the way life is. Now, in the next 3 weeks before the Passover and the days of unleavened bread, you're going to hear messages probably relating to them. You very likely will hear the scripture read, if not before then, perhaps the evening of the Passover. It's in 1 Corinthians 11, verse 28. 1 Corinthians 11, verse 28. In the context of the surrounding scriptures are involved with describing worthiness. Are you worthy to take the Passover? 1 Corinthians 11:28 said, "But let a man examine himself," or a woman examine herself, "and so let him eat of that bread and drink of that cup." Now, we all know, I'm sure, that we're not worthy. Our elder brother gave us a supreme gift to enable us to be worthy. But we're not worthy in and of ourselves, and we never will be. A young Navy ensign who had just graduated from the academy at Annapolis was assigned the Pentagon as his first duty station. And one night he was working late, and at 8 o'clock he clocked out, closed the door to his office, and walked down the hall where he saw the admiral standing by the classified document shredder with a piece of paper in his hand. And as he got nearer, the admiral said to him, "Do you know how to operate this thing? My secretary left early and I don't know how to use it." "Yes, sir," he snapped to attention, hoping to impress the old man. He flipped the switch on the document shredder, grabbed the piece of paper out of his hand, and fed it into the machine. "Well, thank you very much," the admiral said. "I just need one copy." The caption on this little vignette when I read it was simply one word: "Oops!" Exclamation point. Oops! Exclamation point. To help you examine yourselves in the next 3 weeks, I suggest you make an oops list. Now, what is an oops list? An oops list is a list of things that you said this past year that you shouldn't have said. Or conversely, things that you should have said and didn't say, like giving someone a compliment, a word of praise, a word of encouragement, or things that you did that you shouldn't have done, or conversely, things that you should have done that you didn't do, like when it was in the power of your hand to help someone, neglecting to do so. Or certainly this one, things that you thought that you shouldn't have thought. Now, the oops list is a little different from the bucket list. Some of you have probably heard about the popular movie that's been around for a few months, starring Jack Nicholson and Morgan Freeman, who set off on an odyssey of adventures, both terminally ill, hoping to do all the things on their wish list, they call the bucket list, things they wanted to do before they kicked the bucket. And it chronicles their odyssey of racing a couple of muscle cars against each other, visiting the Taj Mahal and the pyramids and the Sphinx, among other things. But the bucket list is something that looks ahead. It's looking to the future. The oops list is something that is taking you back over this last year. You're looking back at things that have happened since the last Passover. You're examining things that happened in your life during that period of time. And I guess in a sense, hopefully it's to ensure that you don't kick your spiritual bucket, if you wanted to use that analogy. Now, what else do you do when you're looking at that list? There are two other components to it. One, you look at the environment that it happened in. Where were you when this oops happened? Were you on the freeway? Were you at home? Were you at work? Were you at church? Were you at the neighbors? And secondly, who was around? Who else was around? Parents, grandparents, children, spouse, neighbors, friends, church members, the minister, whatever. And that doesn't mean you're always going to have someone else around. You can be walking out in the forest and trip over a stump and utter a curse word and no one else hears you, at least no other physical person hears you. Or you can be laying asleep at night in your bed thinking something and no one else is aware of what you're thinking. But if you think about it, for the most part, when you commit an oops, it's usually when someone else is around. And the reason for doing this is if you're truly going to examine this past year, you need to see what the catalyst is that causes you to have an oops. What are the dynamics? Who else is around? Is it predictable when so-and-so walks into the room and you're there 5 minutes that you get into an argument? I mean, that's the type of thing. I'm going to give you an example. A young church member who was married went to work at a new job, and he was there for 2 months, and two people were promoted. So the boss threw a promotion party and invited him to attend. That was at a private club the boss belonged to. And he said, well, you know, I'm new here. I need to make a good impression, show I'm part of the team, so I'll go, but I'll just go for a short time. 2:30 in the morning, after many drinks later, he found himself sitting in the front seat of his car in front of one of the secretary's homes, who'd asked him for a ride home. And before he knew it, she'd slid across the street and planted, or the seat, and planted a kiss on him. Now that kinda got his attention. It kinda woke him up from his semi-inebriated state, and he got out of there. But he resolved going forward that he would never go to another promotion party unless, one, he left after an hour or 45 minutes. And secondly, he never had anything to drink unless it was a soft drink. At least he had sense enough to see what the catalyst was for getting him into problems. Well, the Passover is in 2 weeks, and I mean 3 weeks, and you need to take that time for self-examination. You know, you can't put an old head on young shoulders necessarily, but you certainly, with God's help and God's wisdom and His Spirit, can absorb that wisdom that will help you make changes in your life. And if you go through this examination process and really pay attention to what you learn from it, then I can assure you, you will be ready to eat of that bread and drink of that cup.